conventional.
A new week and more possible mergers and acquisitions.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good day to you. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Intel today said it's buying a division of the German chipmaker Infineon for $1.4 billion. 3M, maker of Scotch tape and such, wants to buy Cogent, which makes fingerprint ID systems. And French drug maker Sanofi Aventis wants to spend $18 billion buying the U.S. biotech firm Genzyme. Genzyme rejected that offer this morning. Reporter Kyle James in Berlin says the biotech deal is a little different.
Genzyme is the world's largest maker of medicines for genetic diseases, but it's been hit by production problems over the past few years. Still, it's got two potential blockbuster drugs in the pipeline, one for multiple sclerosis, another for cholesterol. And that makes Genzyme a very attractive candidate to Sanofi. For one, big drug makers are increasingly looking towards biotech companies for future growth. And another reason is the French drug maker will soon lose a lot of revenue.
Many pharmaceutical companies are losing their patents on the big blockbusters.
Oliver Rakow is an analyst with Deutsche Bank Research. He says Sanofi is now facing generic competition on two of its best-selling drugs.
Therefore, they need acquisitions often of small innovative companies in order to increase their sales again.
While Sanofi's announcement falls short of a hostile bid, media reports say the company might take its offer directly to shareholders. The recent uptick in mergers and acquisitions is especially acute in the pharmaceutical field. Rakow says companies can't just hire more scientists, but need to join up with firms that have research teams and projects already in place. In Berlin, I'm Kyle James for Marketplace.
This morning in a Los Angeles courtroom begins the divorce proceedings that will determine whether Jamie or Frank McCourt owns the L.A. Dodgers. At issue, whether documents prove ownership of the team worth $750 million. Here to help us sort out what we're likely to see in that courtroom and what history tells us about divorce cases such as this is Scott Altman, a law professor at the USC Gould School of Law. Professor, thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
The couple's dispute centers around this agreement that they both signed way back in 2004. What exactly is at issue here?
Well, there's two elements of dispute. One is Mrs. McCourt says she didn't read the document and she was led to believe it only concerned liabilities that might be settled with creditors and not the divorce. And the second is, she says, because of inconsistencies in the document, it should be thrown out altogether. The first draft said that Mr. McCourt would keep anything in his name except the Dodgers in case of divorce. A later draft said he would keep anything in his name, including the Dodgers, in case of divorce.
Now, I can think of many contracts I'd like to get out of, Professor, where
yeah.
I say, well, I didn't read the contract. I mean, is that a legal maneuver?
Well, no, just saying that you didn't read the contract is certainly not sufficient. But her first argument is that she was led to believe before she signed it that it had nothing to do with what would happen in case of divorce. And the question is, was she misled into believing that by Mr. McCourt, or was she, because she's a sophisticated person, she's a lawyer, she has advanced degrees, going to be held responsible for the document she signed?
And how long will this fight take?
I think that really depends on how much testimony the judge is going to allow in this case. These are really factual questions. Exactly what did she know about the document? What was she told? Who told her these things? And presumably they're going to be presenting witnesses who will testify as to precisely what was said.
We'll have to wrap it up there. Professor Scott Altman, we do appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Scott Altman, professor of law at the USC Gould School of Law. Thanks for your time. Consumer spending numbers rose in July at its fastest pace in about 4 months. How's Wall Street looking at it? Numbers are down about 0.8% across the board. The Dow off now about 72 points at 10,078. European markets are higher at the moment, and Asian shares closed mixed today.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree.com. Tools and personalized advice to help control your financial destiny are at the all-new LendingTree.com.
If you were to walk around New Orleans 5 years ago today, well, you wouldn't be walking. You'd be in a boat. The city was nearly lost by Hurricane Katrina and by flooding of people, of hope, and of restaurants. Today, New Orleans food culture has come back strong. And as Marketplace's Eve Trove tells us, she met a family who found an unlikely way to keep their cooking alive.
It's 10:30 a.m. at the cafeteria of Loyola Law School in uptown New Orleans. The staff's preparing for the lunch rush.
So the day for lunch is mustard greens, smothered pork chop, candy yams, cornbread.
Peggy Ratliff runs this kitchen. And no, this is not normal college fare. Ratliff and her mother, Celestine Dunbar, used to have a soul food restaurant called Dunbar's Creole Cooking.
It was family. You just can just come in, put your arms on the table, get your fingers greasy, and so it was just home.
The restaurant was destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. The family business was closed until Dunbar had an idea. She called universities to ask if they needed help running their kitchens. Ratliff says they landed the law school contract a few weeks later.
Well, it looked like we would have been out of the restaurant business if Loyola wouldn't have opened up their doors to her so generously.
It was a deal specific to post-Katrina New Orleans, when creative partnerships were vital. Liz Williams directs the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. She says Katrina drove out many corporate food franchises.
In their place came up all those little mom-and-pop places that had been displaced. So now we have more restaurants that are owned locally than before Hurricane Katrina.
And Peggy Ratliff says local cooks are more appreciated, too.
Now people are more conscious of preserving the food culture here.
Dunbar's may be the only Creole restaurant on a college campus.
So she's doing fried chicken.
And the family members plan to keep the cafeteria contract, but they also want to serve their old neighborhood again. It's about a mile away, called Ferret. Peggy Ratliff doesn't know when that will happen.
Not clear yet. By being closed so long, you have to redo the whole building, the plumbing, the electric. Just don't have the funds.
There is a difference, she says, between finding stability and truly rebuilding. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Ready for some breakfast. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.